chewing on a piece of grass, walking down the road. Tell me, how long you gonna stay here, Joe?
Our next guest on Downtown, one of the founding members of the band America. Racked up a dozen top 40 hits, seven top 10s, a pair of number ones, and 7 million selling albums through the years, not to mention Grammy Awards and approaching 50 years of touring. Dewey Bunnell and Jerry Beckley will bring their 50th anniversary tour to Aura in Portland on March 16th, and we had a chance to talk about the tour and some of the history of the band with America's Dewey Bunnell. Well, let's talk about this tour and the history of the band. 50 years together by the time you wrap up this tour. Now, a lot of bands take hiatus, break up, get back together. What's been the key to you and Jerry staying together for half a century?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I don't know where the last, 25 years went, but it seems like we've just plodded on. You know, this is what we did from the time we were teenagers. When we met in high school, and we were so fortunate that it turned into a career and a lasting career at that. And we've just been, we still enjoy it. We still are maintaining our health to whatever degree anybody can do that consciously and keeping it going. But you're right. We never really left the road. We've had the usual ups and downs of any band. And of course we lost our pivotal third member, Dan Peek, both physically and as a band member. He left the band in 1977, but he was a key element to the first 5-6 years of the band and writing in those core years in the 70s, and then he passed away in 2011. But that was the first big change. But Jerry and I have carried on, with the band, the touring band, and we do that more than recording anymore. And we just love the live show. It's just something that it's a tangible, real-time thing where you're right there physically in contact with your music and your songs and playing them live every night. And it's a really satisfying thing. We're very grateful that it's still working for us.
Is that a change for you from the early days when you were you'd done a lot of work in the studio, you made a lot of demos before you got the big break, but you weren't always sure how the live shows were going to be received in those early days?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It was on-the-job training. I mean, when you consider we were teenagers, 17, 18, and 19, when we formally formed in 1970 after graduating from high school in 1969, we just basically morphed from high school. But to be writing these songs on our acoustic guitars and arranging the vocal harmonies without any real working them on the road to speak of or putting together a live show. It was getting the songs together first, and then to have such a huge success with the first album and the first single, Horse With No Name, and the America album, to be thrown in the deep end of a live show. And we relocated from London, England, where we started, to L.A. to be with the parent company, Warner Brothers, and David Geffen and Elliot Roberts were managing us with their stable of great artists that we looked up to, CSN and Neil Young, and the Eagles were just starting. But they were all much more seasoned, and they had a lot more time on the road. We hadn't. And then to be thrown in, we had a huge tour with Jackson Browne opening for us that first year in 72, going out, and there were a lot of growing pains. We were just not, we had to get a rhythm section first off. We had to have a drummer and a bass player. And, it took a long time to get comfortable and to understand the nuts and bolts of a touring band with big PAs and big production and everything. I wasn't even that versed on an electric guitar, to be honest. I was still learning amps and foot pedals and all of that stuff. But that seems like a lifetime ago now. Rich,
you've talked about your influences and the Everly Brothers high on the top of that list, the Beatles, of course, and growing up as you did right in the middle of the London music scene of the late 60s. But before that, if I remember right, your dad was stationed at Vandenberg Air Force Base, and that's where you learned your love of surf music, folks like Dick Dale and the Deltones, of course, the Beach Boys.
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah, that was terrific. That's where I first started to learn to play guitar. It was like 62, 63, and I was like in the 7th or 8th grade, and I learned those surf guitar tunes, the licks, and Walk, Don't Run, and the Beach Boys music was permeating me. But, you know, being in an Air Force family, that was in real time, and that was the whole surf scene in the West Coast, but it wasn't. I was, again, a spectator of sorts, because in no time we moved again to Biloxi, Mississippi, or Omaha, Nebraska. We moved around. But I absorbed that whole thing and really loved it. And it was, you know, it was a coming-of-age time, and I remember I'd listened to my parents' music, and I guess I sang Hound Dog when I was 5 years old or something, Elvis, and you know, it wasn't a serious thing, but music started to become more and more important to me, and it became a part of my life, as it did with everybody in my generation in general. I think it became a real central focus, at least it was for me. So basically, Ventura Highway, that song emerged from my time living at Vandenberg Air Force Base, like you said. That was, we also were stationed then a few years later up in the Bay Area. My dad was stationed. We lived in San Jose, California, another base up there, so there was a little more California element. Everybody thought we were a California band when we came out, and when we moved back from England with this band America, and we were there. Of course, there was the confusion that it was a band from England called America. So it was very confusing, but we did absorb all kinds of musical styles. Dan was originally from Missouri and had roots there, and so he was always sort of our country element, a little bit country type of style. And Jerry had been schooled on piano, and he was a little more classically trained, so he wrote more of our ballads and piano based songs, still does. And so we had a nice combination of influences, but we all came together on whatever the hits were of the day. We all waited with bated breath for the next Beatle album release, and everybody was counting the minutes for those kind of events, because it really was a focus, music and the band you loved and when's the next album coming out and all that.
Now, is the story true that when you guys were working on the first album, the assumption throughout that was that I Need You would be the first single, but then kind of last minute, Warner Brothers went with Horse With No Name?
Yeah, it was a real case of going with the song that is obviously got a solid basis. It was like it's almost a standard the day Jerry wrote it. It sounded like a song we'd heard, and I think Warner Brothers, the powers that be there, realized that was a safe bet single to start to get our toe in the water. And we did too. And as we recorded the tunes on that first album, that was always our focus as going to be the single. This will lead the way. And then we could do something that may be a little more adventurous. And as it turned out, we'd written another batch of songs after the first album was pretty much in the can. And actually, the first album came out without Horse With No Name on it. That's one of a collectible, if you will. But as soon as it was almost simultaneous, we were in recording four more songs, of which Horse With No Name was one. When the parent company there, Warner's, heard those, they said, "Wait a minute, everybody's leaning towards that. We're going to put that out as the single." So they went the total opposite from the tried and true safe bet, "I Need You," a ballad, a nice strong song, which went on, by the way, to be a hit of its own. And is our most covered song. It's been covered by everybody from Johnny Mathis, you know, to Harry Nilsson. It was a standard. It did become a standard in its own way. So, but you know, they swung all the way over to basically a novelty song. Horse With No Name for me at the time. I wrote it. It was just a travelogue. It was sort of my fantasizing about times I spent in the desert and you know, getting out of the cold, rainy weather of England type thing.
And you've said, too, that you think of it as that you write the outdoor songs, Jerry writes the indoor songs.
Yeah, that's we kind of realized that after a while, that's a pretty well nutshell way to say we write. I mean, it's just a real good fortune that timing and everything that happened with the beginning of our career and the three of us coming together with different styles, different voice, vocals. I mean, the harmony, singing three-part harmony is a magical thing that you can't really put a finger on. And different voices, the quality of different voices, everybody's voice is different. It's like a fingerprint. To get three of them, four of them, or layered harmonies, you never know what you're going to get. Mm-hmm. It can sometimes it's not quite as sweet sounding. You may be hitting the notes, but the quality of your voice maybe not doesn't blend with another voice. So we were just so fortunate that the three of us, different writing styles, the three different voices, you know, all came together. And yeah, Jerry, as you look back, he wrote the ballads, it seems, more of the love songs, the indoor songs, if you will. And my songs tended to be a little more visual, outdoor songs. So.
We're talking with Dewey Bunnell of America. They come to Aura in Portland on March 16th on the 50th anniversary tour. Anybody knows the band just from the singles, first of all, I think they're missing out, because those of us who've loved the albums appreciate the wide range of styles that you guys play on the album and the deep cuts and some of the interesting collaborations through the years. One of my favorites is with a great friend of our show who's been on with us a number of times, and when you guys worked with Jimmy Webb on The Last Unicorn.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well, Jimmy is another sort of mentor type with us. We've been so lucky, too, again, because we started as these young teenagers coming to L.A. with a big hit record. We were green as you get, and Jimmy Webb, when we met Jimmy, we'd already were, even in high school, we'd sang By the Time I Get to Phoenix and Galveston or something. I don't know which songs we sang, but it was great. He's just been, he's Jerry's son's godfather. We were fortunate to get him in our heyday when we were flying around in our private plane with the band and playing the big arenas and everything. We were able to talk him into come out and be our opening act, which was not something he did very well. And I don't know how comfortable he was with it, but he loved it. We had a great time. And here we had this feather in our cap. We had this, you know, one of the quintessential songwriters of our time out there with all his great songs. And yes, then The Last Unicorn was, he was always pretty busy, Jimmy, writing. And he got involved in that film, animated film, The Last Unicorn. And he wrote the songs. And he said, I want you guys to sing. And it was Jerry and I at that point. Dan had left the band. So that's another great thing that we can say we had a part of. We do sing the title song, The Last Unicorn, now and then. It works best with it works that good either way. But we play some symphony shows, a half a dozen symphony shows usually a year. And it works really great with a symphony.
You've said earlier the focus is on the live performances, but you still record. I love Back Pages. That was a great collection of covers. I think your version of Time of the Season is absolutely fantastic. Any chance of a volume two of that?
Well, thank you for that, Rich, because, yeah, that was something that I was really proud of, because every band wants to do, you know, their favorites and a collection of songs that we picked up really at random, but yeah, we'd love to do another Back Pages too. Scheduling is everything. We're getting older, and you know, we would not discount that happening in this new year. We've been focused on this 50th anniversary thing because it's a huge milestone, and obviously, it's another pushing off point for the touring, and it's initiated a huge excavation of old material and old. We've done this a little bit before. We got our toe in the water with an archives album, but now we're going through all these hard drives. We've got an archivist in Jeff Larson. There's a documentary coming together. We recently filmed a live show at the London Palladium out in London that was really great and a huge multi-camera thing. We've even got a lady writing our biography, So all of these things are taking up a hell of a lot of our time right now, in addition to touring, just wading through stuff. There's everything from 8mm films to live broad TV shows, you know, and the Merv Griffin show or Dick Cavett or whatever. They're pulling all this stuff together to put together a documentary, which is exciting, and it really tells the tale in a lot of ways, good or bad, of what we've done over the years, lots of things.
Well, you guys still...
we'll probably put together a list of, you know, songs that we love that inspired us and give it a shot again on a Back Pages too.
Well, you guys sound great. The band is terrific, and I can't wait to see you a week from Saturday at Aura down in Portland on the 50th anniversary tour. The record business is so funny because of what's getting promoted and what's getting played. I was back re-listening to Here and Now. Yeah, Ride On in any other time and place would have been a huge hit.
Thank you. Yeah, that was a good one, and that project was good. It was at that point in our career, we had these independent labels and things were one-offs and this, why don't we try this? And we loved this band, Fountains of Wayne, and Jerry had reached out to Adam Schlesinger, one of the writers and producer of that band. And one thing led to another, and before we knew it, we were putting together songs for this project that he was going to produce, and he did, along with his co-producer, James Eha from Smashing Pumpkins. So it was us kind of coming with into a new, younger generation of artists and people, and Jim James, My Morning Jacket, and dare I say Ryan Adams, who's got some bad press, obviously. But it was a great project. It was fun, and we enjoyed that. And Ride On was one of those things that made the grade. And I love it too. It works well live, and we haven't played it for years. And that's a good suggestion, I think, as we dip into the catalog to try and pull out songs. That's a good suggestion. I think I'll put that on the list. We also got to do David Letterman behind that song.
Right.
It was a fun thing, too.
Well, hey, dude, we appreciate you making time for us this afternoon. Travel safely, and I look forward to seeing you. Hope to get a chance to come up and say hello after the show when you're up here in Maine.
Oh, absolutely, Rich. I hope so, too. We'll look for you there on March 16th.